You're listening to the Bliss Runner Podcast, episode number 6. This podcast is for any woman who has ever had a challenge in her sex life. Whether you've lost interest in sex in your long-term relationship, orgasms have become elusive, or you've just been longing for something more, something deeper that you can't quite even articulate, this podcast is here to help. In this show, we'll explore how you can transform your experience of sex by learning the subtle art of awakening your sexual energy. Now, this is not just woo-woo stuff. It's tangible, and it's having a profound effect on women's lives. We'll hear stories by women like you and me who've moved from lack of sexual enjoyment to incredible, expanded, ecstatic states by accessing this energy inside. We'll also talk to authors, teachers, and practitioners in the field for guidance on how you can get started on this deeply gratifying journey. I can tell you that it has completely changed my life, and I know it can enrich yours. I'm really glad you're here. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. This week, I'm interviewing Susanna Frioni. Now, I've been a big fan of Susanna's podcast, Sex, Love, Desire, for almost a year now, and I was so excited when she agreed to be a guest. She's just got this warmth about her and wisdom way beyond her years, and she's got so much information to share with women about igniting themselves through their erotic empowerment. So sit back and listen to this interview. She shares some very inspiring stories from her life, all about how she really lost herself for a while there and how she found her way back to her authentic core inner being. So let's get right into it. Susanna, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Susanna. I love that we have the same name.
I know, it's great. So before we go to the beginning of your story, I wonder if you might just start by talking a little bit about what you do now. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Right now, most of my work revolves around what I call igniting women through erotic empowerment. So I work privately with women as a coach or a guide in literally bringing them to life, the most alive they've probably ever been in a long time. And there's a variety, like whilst we specialize in sex and relationships, I take a real holistic approach because it's all interconnected. So that's one layer. I also have my own podcast, Love, Sex, Desire, where I share the best of what I'm living and learning, and I get to interview some incredible people. And I also host and facilitate sacred dance experiences and events for women as well.
And wonderful. Well, yes, I found you through your podcast. I've been a frequent listener for quite a few months now, and it's really, it's a wonderful show. I enjoy it.
Thank you.
So take us back. So I want to get into your own personal story of sexual awakening. So if you could, you know, what launched you into this whole world to want to work in this field? And I'm sure there's many twists and turns to your story that led you here. But can you kind of take us back to the beginning and maybe even lay a little bit of groundwork as to what your family conditioning was and your cultural conditioning around sex and sort of where you were in your mind about sex as you started to enter into being a sexually active person?
So, you know, when I look back historically of like my own sort of sexuality, it was something I was connected to from a very young age. Just intuitively, I was very curious in exploring that. And there was just this innate trust always in this experience within my body. I feel like I actually accessed it very, very young. And for me, it actually happened on the dance floor, you know, just having this really ecstatic amazing experience. But then I also realized there was other ways to access it. And one was obviously through my body and self-pleasuring. And there's just an intense curiosity. And I did not hesitate in exploring. As I grew older, I think I grew up with very strict parents. I'm in a very small community or a very small town where, you know, sort of, I don't know if you've, did you grow up in a small town at all by any chance?
I've lived in many small towns. We moved around a lot when I was a kid, so.
Okay, so I always have this thing, like small towns love to talk. And they love to talk. And a lot of the stuff they're talking about is so not true. So it can be really hard to live life fully in those places because it just feels like someone's always talking about you.
Yeah.
And I think that can be quite challenging for a young person. And the parents who have, I mean, you're working in the community. It's like everything, what goes around comes around. And that was really tough. So I had very strict parents that were sort of always very in control of, you know, who I would be spending time with and how much time and how and when. But I, in terms of my, sexuality, I just trusted it. I mean, I didn't have sex until I was 17. It was a long-term boyfriend. Mm-hmm. But again, there was always a deep connection with it, always a trust. I naturally had strong sexual boundaries to the point where, you know, I was often being called the dick tease and I did not care. I just knew what I needed to feel safe in order to open up and share that experience with someone. And I didn't care what I was being called for it. The challenge, though, for me started to kick in when sort of my early 20s. And I got married at a young age. I was 21 when I got married. Mm-hmm. And I had my daughter also when I was 21. And at that stage, I'd already been a stepmom for a few years. I've sort of been in that motherhood role since I was 19. So,
wow.
Yeah, I didn't have, you know, I've had an unusual, I lived a lot of lives by the time I was 25. And naturally, I think sort of the biggest challenge was almost came through motherhood and marriage and monogamy. It's like I've got all this sexual energy and I'm madly in love with this particular person. But I also notice I seem to have a lot of sexual attractions with other people, and that created a lot of inner conflict for me.
Sure.
Plus adding motherhood in there, it's like my body changed, my relationship to my body changed, just everything changed. And it was really just a confronting, confusing time for me that my natural personality was just to make things work and just focus on the good. And, you know, if you change something over here, like this sort of staying in a fixing role out here and everything will get better. Mm-hmm. It's the icing on the cake, sweeping stuff under the rug was my approach until that approach no longer worked and ultimately led me to just feeling incredibly numb.
Yeah.
And miserable.
What was the, can you peg a moment when you could tell that it wasn't working for you anymore? Was there something that really sort of slapped you in the face and said, wake up?
Yeah, there was two moments in particular. One of them was this moment with my husband at the time where, let's just call it like some freaky intervention happened where he discovered that I had, you know, I had had an affair or I had cheated on him early on in our relationship. And just lots around that sort of came to the surface. I kind of call this like the first whisper. And it was great because it actually led us to having conversations around an open marriage, which was something I didn't even know if that was what I wanted, but I couldn't, I couldn't make peace with, I'm in love with you, but I'm noticing this is also happening over here and I don't know what to do with it because it doesn't fit with my belief or mold of what a marriage is supposed to be or how I grew up with marriage.
Right.
And so that was on the table for quite a while. And I mean, it was like the blind leading the blind. We didn't know what we were potentially getting into. We didn't really even know what it looked like. And it just, before we sort of actually did anything about it, like we never made it past the discussion table that, you know, it was an adamant no for him, which I just remember that distinct conversation where he was like, I can't do this. And I also wasn't prepared to leave the marriage for something that I wasn't even quite sure I knew exactly what I wanted. But I remember agreeing and it was like the death of me. Just something died in me that day. And it was maybe another 18 months, potentially maybe even 2 years of navigating this new phase of knowing, well, that's not on the table, but I'm literally dying every day. And I could feel like this, almost like a darkness or a void starting to consume me. And this is how the numbness started to kick in. And it got to the point, though, where I just took things into my own hands, which was, you know, I ended up getting involved with someone else more emotionally than sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this, you know, I justified it in terms of when this part of me is being fulfilled or nourished in some way, I do show up as a better wife and I do show up as a better mum and I do show up better in my work. And that was how I reasoned with it for so long. But when you're living a double life like that, it is exhausting.
Yeah.
It's out of integrity and it's just painful because you're not living your truth.
Yeah.
And so the second point of that was I found myself at a 10-day meditation retreat. And I think it was just the – I noticed – my highs were incredibly high, but my lows were incredibly low. Some of the other signs were I was literally going to sleep crying and I'd wake up crying. Mm-hmm. The tension in my jaw was just insane. I literally was waking up with locked jaw. And my body just started to almost like I was a fitness instructor, so I started to have these particular weird injuries just happening in my body, and I started to get sick a lot, and my mental health was just starting to go a bit crazy. So lots of signs, and as much as I wanted to go away on some luxurious retreat to be on my own and, you know, really experience some intense, beautiful TLC, I got guided to a 10-day meditation retreat called Vipassana.
Uh-huh.
And I was just about to ask, you know, do you know, have you heard of Vipassana before?
I had not before. I think I read your blog post about it and then also listened to your podcast about it. So that it sounds rather intense.
It is intense. You know, it's the complete opposite of a luxurious TLC retreat. Everything is stripped away and you are literally meditating for 10 hours a day for 10 days straight with complete silence, no communicating to anybody.
How did you find your way to this one?
Yeah, so it was interesting. The first time I heard about it was through a client. And she had actually done Vipassana in India and she was talking about it. And I was like, you did what? I didn't even know these places existed and who the hell would like to go do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why. Why would you even go sit in silence for 10 days? Then I had another client gift me a book, which was the Eat, Pray, Love book by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yes. Okay. Was that the kind of meditation retreat that she went on as well?
Well, sort of similar. I don't think hers was actually Vipassana, but it was a silent. She spoke a lot about that silent meditation. And so, you know, another seed got planted. Then I found myself at the dentist and I literally flipped open a magazine and there was a huge write-up on this retreat, which is literally, 20 minutes from where I lived. And I was like, okay, I'm getting the signs.
Yeah.
And then I literally went home and decided, because when you've got three signs, sometimes you just need a fourth.
Yeah.
And I went home and did my oracle cards and asked for guidance. And the two cards I got were retreat to nature and meditate. So that was it. Like, I'm going.
Yeah, that's pretty clear.
Yeah, no denying it then.
Yeah.
So they were sort of the two big signs that I knew, yeah, it's time.
Okay, so you're at the retreat, and take us into that. Like, how did you, well, first of all, how did you manage your life to even, that's what I'm trying to imagine is, okay, I've got two kids and I'm a single mom and I have a job and all of that stuff, same stuff. And how would I even swing it?
Totally. And I could so relate because, I mean, those things ran through all my mind as well. And, I mean, at the end of the day, it really just took a choice of me saying, I'm going to go do this.
Mm-hmm.
It was then just a matter. It wasn't even asking permission for my work. It was like, I need this. I'm not well. I need this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that got taken care of very quickly. And then in terms of the kids, I remember thinking, oh my God, who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to pack the lunches? Who's going to do the school runs? Who's going to like the kids' social life or whatever they had going on? It was, normal. And I had to go, oh my God, my husband is the father of these children. He will figure it out. It's 10 days. So that was the scenario I was in. It was literally just a stop controlling everything and just let it go.
Right,
there's only so much that can really happen in 10 days. But now, I would have just asked my parents or my family or my friends. I think when you know you really need something, you just got to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, I applaud you for the strength of character to recognize that and to do that, because I just shudder to think of how much more you would have suffered and what the consequences would have been if you hadn't recognized the need to save yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think particularly as mums, and I think solo mums, like I really feel for the solo mums out there, because it's a different dynamic. It's a different, there were just things on your plate that you kind of took for granted that when you're in a marriage or a partnership, things were different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it is, though, just making that decision, making that commitment, and then letting go of control and having other people step up to help you. And they are so happy to, I think, particularly when it's revolving around your sanity and your well-being.
Right.
Why would we not want to support that?
Right. So tell us about the retreat.
So it was, I was very miserable when I arrived. I didn't want to speak to anybody. So thank God I was at a silent meditation retreat. I think for the first 5 days, like I did not think of my husband or my kids once. Like that's how, depressed I think I was, really. I just loved having this space to do nothing. I will say, though, at the very first session, I was freaked out a little bit. You're in a Dharma hall and they split the men. The men are on one side and the women are on the other side, and they play an audio and some chant starts happening. And at that stage, I wasn't into yoga or anything. So this was like this really radical experience. Like even when I told my parents, they were concerned I was getting involved in some kind of weird cult. any of my friends also thought, like, I don't know if you should be going there. Like, so there was like a cultish vibe associated with these meditation retreats, which looking back now I think is hilarious. But I just remember that mantra like starting, and I just kind of, it was like it woke me up a little bit. My eyes shot open and I looked around the room, and I'm going to be judgmental here, like all these strange people wearing these strange clothing sitting here. And I just thought, what the fuck am I doing here? This is not me. And a part of me literally got up, went and got my things and went to the car and, you know, wanted to go home. But it was like I got to my car. This is just, you know,
in your head.
In my head. And I just thought, nothing's going to change, though, when I get home. Like, it's going to be Groundhog Day again. And I just, it was like this, I don't know if it was a moment of defeat or a moment of deep truth, but I just closed my eyes and opened my palms and I just went, give it to me. And I just became really, really open to whatever it was I needed to experience because I knew I was guided there.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things as well, you know, if you want to create something different in your life, you have to start doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the mark of doing something different for me. So whilst I was there, though, probably the unexpected and surprising thing was my roommate. I got teamed up with probably the only other young woman there, and who happened to be gay. And I thought this was just some big joke from the universe because I thought with men and women being segregated, there was no way I could get myself in trouble there. Any kind of distraction. My life was already complicated enough.
Yeah.
But there she was. And there was this intense and immediate curiosity and connection, which ended up being explored at the retreat, which if anybody from like the Vipassana meditation, I probably would not be allowed to go back.
Right.
You know, like a lot of rules, but there was an intense curiosity. And for me, it was like, I will share this one piece. Before I got married, my husband had said to me, are you sure you don't need time to explore your sexuality?
Huh.
And but back then I just thought that was the dumbest question anyone could have ever asked me because there was like I could never see myself having a relationship with a woman, just exploring, you know, sexually, whether it's like a drunken case on the dance floor, like it was just this thing that girls did back then, but the relationship was like, no, I'm all good. Uh-huh. So here I was, like 5 or so years later in a situation with her. And it was really that I'm just going to explore this once and for all. And literally the way I viewed it was also get it out of my system.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Just get this out of my system. And it was beautiful. It was amazing. I learned so much. But by the end of those 10 days, I had decided, and my way of thinking was, I got married for a reason. I'm a mother for a reason. I created everything that I ever wanted. So I'm going to stay here and make this work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm choosing to be with my husband. And I think the beautiful thing about sharpening your intuition and trusting that intuition is that intuition comes in the moment. So you can't sort of like forecast the future and make a decision like today based on something that hasn't yet happened.
Right.
That's not how intuition works. Intuition works like in the moment, in the moment, in the moment. And so it wasn't until I left that beautiful container and then back into my old life where my intuition was so loud I could no longer ignore it.
Mm.
And the first two things to change were my career, my work. I'd been in the fitness industry for about 8 years and it was like a mad, mad passion of mine. But it was stunting my growth. And I knew that. I'd always wanted to go off and do my own thing, never had the courage to do it. And whilst I had no idea of what was coming next, I just knew it was time to walk away from my work as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally a few days later, the next thing to walk away from was my marriage. I just got that clear hit. It's time.
Yeah.
It's time. And so
yeah.
I think at that point, you know, really this was the start of reawakening myself sexually in, I mean, one was definitely coming home to myself and having those beautiful 10 days of meditation. And look, for anyone listening, you don't have to go and do 10 days. You can just start with a little bit. It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
But also I say 10 days is not that long in the grand scheme of your life. And if you can have an opportunity like that, an immersion like that, it is so powerful because it literally recalibrates your entire system.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
And that is potent. And for me, it showed up in, like I said, when my intuitive voice spoke to me, it was so loud and so deafening. Like there was just no more ignoring it. My inner critic, my egoic stories, my fear were like the volume on that got turned down because I was just so connected to like my true nature, my true self, my inner self.
Right.
That, yeah, that's it. It's like that deep inner knowing. That's how you experience it.
Yeah.
And the second thing was I just started telling the truth. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I started telling the truth. And I have a saying with my clients, like the moment you shut down your truth is the moment you also shut down your sexuality, your mm-hmm. vitality in your life.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah.
Yes. So they were the first two things to happen, to tell the truth on. And then sort of started this whole letting go process, which, I mean, I literally let go of everything that was associated with who I thought I was
mm.
or who I was supposed to be, not just like in the physical realm, but, you know, emotionally, mentally. I started excavating all these stories that I had for myself or the way I defined myself or the roles I thought I needed to play, because suddenly mm. it was, okay, if I'm not a wife, who am I? And if I'm not this full-time mother, who am I? And if I'm not this group fitness teacher, like who am I when I stripped away all these identities?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I tell my clients, like, that is the prime time to give yourself permission to explore. And that's exactly what I did. I gave myself 6 months of, no, I didn't work. I didn't, you know, quickly jump into the next thing. I just went and literally I did anything I wanted to do. I did anything that I deemed to be fun. I tried so many new things. Anything I was curious about, I just gave myself permission to go there wholeheartedly.
Wow, that's amazing.
And one of those things was falling in love with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this was something that just never entered my mind. Like it just was something I had deemed impossible. But here I was in love with a woman. And it was a catalyst for me to literally go, well, hang on, if I deemed this to be impossible, but it is actually possible, what on earth in my life am I also deeming impossible that's also possible for me?
Right, right, yes.
And so, yeah, I would say that would be the start of this whole new sexual awakening.
Wow. So how did you start to understand sex from like a more of an energetic level than a physical, you know, than or even an orientation or a physical level? You know, how did you what was your path like from the point when you fell in love with a woman into because you talk a lot about, you know, energetic, ecstatic sex on your podcast, and I'm just really interested in how you found your way into that side of things, because it's not, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion by any means that people do find their way there.
No, and for me, though, sex has always been energetic. Like, that has, you know, when you, I guess I shared that right at the beginning, like, my portal through my sexuality had been through those realms. It was just something I was always aware of. It was less physical and more of just this particular experience that I was having. So I've always been attuned to that. I would say, though, more recently, since discovering, I've interviewed her on my podcast, Jaya.
Yeah.
And she created the erotic blueprint, which I highly recommend everybody go discover, because it's like, she's discovered there are five erotic languages. So sort of think of like love languages, but for how you are wired erotically. And that little quiz, or that particular, you know, body of work, just confirmed for me that I am wired energetically. Mm-hmm. That is my natural, you know, way of being with my sexual energy. So for me, it hasn't been some intense exploration, because it's just innate for me, not for everybody. So, well, probably the only thing I can add to that, though, would be I did a lot of work with a medical intuitive for a while and some mentoring with her. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of work around, you know, the chakras and the soul essences, which are part of the higher chakras, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a body of work. Her name's Belinda Davidson, for anyone who wants to check her out. And she has what's called the School of the Modern Mystics. And she has, you know, in your eighth chakra, they say it is the home of your 12 soul essences, and this is where you download your soul purpose. And so I did this work with her, and literally when I discovered all my soul essences, I was amazed at how much sexual energy was part of that. And that was so comforting and reassuring for me, because I almost felt like I had too much sexual energy. Like, I was just the sexual one, and I thought that I really needed to tone this down or contain it. But that was just confirmation, like, oh, this is just who I am. Like, this is essence and part of my natural state. That, and I was like, and it's actually part of my work. So hallelujah. Thank you very much. That is so liberating to me, because I can just now embrace this on a bigger level. Just kind of to answer your question, I don't feel like I, particularly had to go on any intent. Like, I am not the person who has attended the Tantra workshops or read a significant amount of Tantra books. I get told by a lot of people, like, you should go and do Tantra, or like, oh my God, what you're talking about is Tantra. And I always say, I feel like I already know it, and I don't need to get dogmatic about it and label it as something. I come from a different path, and again, I'm just finally already attuned to it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel the same way. So I'm sure a lot of women will really appreciate hearing that, because, like, for me, when I was just starting to question what I thought I knew about sex and my sexuality and my experience of it, I sort of had in the back of my mind, like, I should probably check out Tantra. Like, I know that there's this whole thing about sacred sexuality, and that sounds very appealing to me. But there was something about the way I had perceived Tantra, and that was probably just, you know, a handful of images or websites or just random things that I'd run across over the years. I found it hard to relate to, you know, from where I was coming from with this really ordinary life. And I just couldn't imagine myself running off to Bali and spending 3 months, you know, studying Tantra with, you know, my kids and the basement flooding. So it's like, what are you going to do? So, but I think, you know, one of the great things is that you can be experiencing all of the essential truths of what Tantra is all about in a very ordinary Western life. You know, you don't have to run off and do those things. You can learn how to access this energy or you can be born very naturally attuned to it the way you were, which is so beautiful. I hope more of our kids are born this way.
And I would also add here, you know, I'm always encouraging women that part of this journey is to trust your own desires. So like, if you are feeling the pull to Tantra, like, go do it. But if you're not feeling it and it's coming from a place of like, I should do it, I'm like, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Really, don't do it just because you think you should do it. Absolutely not. This is about coming home to yourself and really trusting, or actually I'd go deeper, like really connecting to your own inner pulse, that own desire that is trying to pull you in a particular direction. Like, what happens when you trust that and follow that? How does your life begin to unfold?
Yeah.
And I think as well, the Vipassana for me, my experience through the meditation, because it was focused purely on awareness of breath and sensation, I mean, they are two core elements to do with Tantra work.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, like those two little pieces, I mean, I carried with me, well, I have since then, you know, they're like huge tools in my life as I move forward that literally changed everything to me. Mm. So, naturally, they, you know, even when I think of my sexual experiences with a woman, which was another way of, I always say this as well, sometimes these, you know, sexual experiences you have with people, they can awaken like a whole new thing in you that you didn't even know existed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely the case with being with a woman. My idea of sex got turned upside down and inside out. And I learned so much about my own body by being with a woman. It was incredible.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, when you're working with a client and if they've come to you because they're struggling in their sex life and maybe they've, whatever it is, you know, maybe they've lost desire in their relationship or maybe they were having challenges just from the get-go. What are some of the ways that you help them enter into trying to unlock this deep desire within them and their own, you know, path through it?
Mm. So a lot of the work I'll do with women is what I call like connecting with your own erotic woman. I call her or define her as the erotic woman. I notice a lot of my clients will use different language, and I actually feel it's very important to use the language that your clients are using. So they might define her as, you know, the inner goddess, or they define feminine, or my sexual one. Like, they have all sorts of beautiful names, but so we kind of know what we're both talking about. We'll just start with the erotic woman.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just this aspect of you. I believe we have many aspects, and this is just one, and it's about reconnecting with her and starting a relationship with her. So we really work from the inside out and let her guide their life. You know, what happens when she starts to take the lead, or what happens when she starts to make decisions? What happens when you give her some of the power in your life?
Mm-hmm.
We come at it from that angle, because my experience has been when women are able to have that connection and start to develop and cultivate that relationship, they're eventually able to start to articulate the kind of relationship they really desire to be in. And it's no longer coming from a place of lack, mm-hmm. or it's no longer coming from a place of something's wrong with me, or I'm broken, or something's wrong with the relationship either. They really step back into their wholeness, where anything is possible. And I really think your desires from that place are aligned with your soul and are so much more potent. So from there, there's like a clarity in their desires, and then it's this, and then it's just really about developing whatever skills are required to close that gap between where they might be now and what it is they're moving into.
Mm-hmm. So how did you move into doing this kind of work with women, you know, from the point of having your sexual awakening and leaving your work as a fitness instructor? How did you bridge that gap into becoming a coach with women?
Yeah, so it all started really with the first thing I did after I left was I eventually did yoga. Now, I have to add here, that went against every fitness philosophy I had had for the previous 8 years, because I literally viewed yoga as the lazy class. I was your, you know, cardio junkie. Give me the loud music. Give me the hardcore sweat. If you are not going hard, go home. Like, that was my approach to fitness. Uh-huh. And so I could not get my head around this stretching class.
Yeah.
But again, at that point, I was just getting guided to it. And I thought, well, I can go and get a job in a marketing firm, which is what I have a degree in, mm-hmm. or I can step over here into something new that I've never done before, and I have no idea what that path looks like. So the path, I kind of know what that looks like, or do I want to go where I've got no idea where I'm going? I'm going where I've got no idea where I'm going.
You are such a brave woman.
Because I also know, like, that's where the most growth happens. Lean into where the unknown is. So I did. I signed up for a yoga teacher training, and I was very grateful. I actually came in at the very end of that particular training, and they let me do that because I'd done Vipassana, and they thought that was a really solid foundation to move into this work. Mm-hmm. And the first workshop I sat in was about consciousness and chakras, and I'll never forget. I thought, oh my God, I've been practicing yoga and I didn't even know it. Like, this is yoga? Huh. I'd always just seen it as the asanas, and I was like, that's only one tiny little aspect of it. This is a whole other world that makes up yoga. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, again, it's that whole, Susanna, go and do tantra, because what you're talking about is tantra. It's like, huh. So it was just beautiful. But then the chakras stuff, I was like, man, that's just too far left field for me. I don't understand that. Uh-huh. But I have that approach as well, and I encourage that for a lot of women. Like, go in open-heartedly, go with an open mind, take what you need at any given moment, and just forget the rest. It's all cool. And so the yoga was interesting, because the other thing I'll add here is when I left the fitness industry, I swore I would never, ever teach again. Mm. Like, I wanted to burn that bridge. I was so done. But I think by, you know, the third workshop, it was just, I'm so going to teach yoga. I'm just a teacher. Self. And so it started. I started teaching yoga. And the beauty of teaching yoga was I learned a new way of guiding people to move that didn't rely on music, that didn't rely on choreography or high energy. Suddenly, the way I would teach my yoga as well, most of the time was without music. I used the breath as soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But there was, it was just a different way of teaching people to move that really impacted me as a teacher and broaden, you know, my skill set of how I guide people. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I did was I had a desire. I needed to write. I just wanted to express myself. So I started a blog and I knew eventually it would turn into a business, but you know, the first intent was I just wanted to start writing and sharing part of my story. Yeah. And then sort of the next thing that happened was one of my friends was hosting a wellness retreat, and she asked if I would go and teach yoga. Obviously I said yes to that, but then she also wanted a yoga rave as sort of like an icebreaker for the first evening for all the participants. And I said, hell no, I don't do yoga raves, but give me 60 minutes and I'll create something awesome for you. And that was my invitation to fuse, you know, my love of yoga and all I had learned there, sort of the meditation. But then there was the other part of me. She'd been asleep for a few years, the group fitness instructor who did love the high energy, who did love the music. But I wanted to do it with my own flavor. And for me, that was dance. And I literally just created 60 minutes of this incredible movement piece of women, where it was obviously some dance and some energy work and a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
It became a huge highlight.
That sounds amazing. I want to come. I want to play.
And then, yeah, from there, it's, I guess you could say, yeah, I had the sacred dance piece and I was also life coaching. So the other thing I did new was coaching has always been a big thing for me. Like, I've been a sports coach all my life, a fitness coach. I naturally love bringing out the best in people, but I wanted a deeper framework that could support me. Because one thing I started to notice was, you know, we are so unique as individuals, and what works for one person might actually reinforce someone's ego or habitual patterns. And I thought, wow, this is so interesting. And the tool for me was the Enneagram. It's something I'd been interested in for a few years, but kind of lightly, and it was more of like a personal thing just so I could understand myself. And I literally Googled deep coaching. I wanted some coaching, but I wanted it to be deep. And funnily enough, there was an actual program or certification called deep coaching that specialized in the Enneagram. And I thought, this is, oh my God, this has my name all over it.
Yeah.
And so that was about a 12-month study for me, and I started coaching women, and it was more around also, I wouldn't necessarily call it business coaching, but it was just about, you know, helping these women get very, very clear on what they want in terms of how they're expressing themselves through their work. And also taking care of their own inner life, just telling the truth. It was about deep alignment. But then after doing the work that I would say with Belinda Davidson, who I mentioned earlier, and realizing, oh my God, there is so much sex up in my soul essences. And I naturally have a desire to speak about, you know, sex and share that with people. How can I do that? And then I launched the podcast, Love, Sex, Desire. And then my coaching just, you know, slightly changed in flavor. I just allowed that conversation to really come to the forefront instead of it being in the background.
I see. Okay.
Mm.
What's your number? What's your Enneagram number?
I am dominant in type 7. I'm the fun one.
Yes, I guess that makes total sense, right?
Exactly. Yes. I think it's like the one of, yeah, I would, will I? Yes, I'm going to say it is like the most profound tool I've ever come across in terms of really understanding your own inner realms and how your egoic structure is formed and your own mental stories and that own narrative and your habitual thinking, like to unravel. The Enneagram for me is like the most potent because it also shows you the pathway and a map to liberation. And that, like, it's this real, here are the clear indicators to know that you are, if you want to say, like, progressing or expanding or aligning with your true nature. This is what will be happening. This is how you'll be showing up. And I love that. And I also love it as a tool in understanding other people. It is particularly in relationships. Like, again, it has helped me so much in having compassion for particularly my partners, because, you know, obviously they're our most challenging relationships. But It has allowed me to communicate with them so much more effectively that there is no way, yeah, I would be able to do what I can now without the help of the Enneagram.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm going to have to dive deeper into it because I've only just barely scratched the surface. Wow. Okay. So is there anything we've come pretty close here to the end of our time. And I wonder if there's anything you would love to share about what's coming up for you or how people can work with you. Obviously you're coaching and they can find you on your website and we'll have all of the links in the show notes. But if there's anything particular you want to share about what's happening.
I think right now, if you come over to my website, susannafrani.com, you'll get to stay up to date with all that is happening in my world and just the best of what I'm discovering right now. I guess my focus is really around relationships and understanding what does it really take to create an amazing relationship and the sex life within that particular container. Mm-hmm. So I'm diving deep, deep, deep into all things erotic right now. And yeah, I mean, follow me on Instagram as well. I also share some amazing things on there.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you. I can't thank you enough for agreeing to come on the show today. I really, really appreciate it. And I know that a lot of women are going to find your story fascinating and inspiring, and you're just out there helping so many people, and it's wonderful.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So there you have it. If you'd like to see the show notes for this episode, please head over to my website at www.blissrunner.com/podcast/episode5. While you're there, I would really love you to pick up a free copy of the guided meditation that I've created for you. It's a version of the meditation that I used that kickstarted my own sexual awakening, and I'd love for you to have it. If you enjoyed this conversation and you'd like to hear more candid conversations about women's sexual energy, head on over to iTunes and leave a review. I hope you'll join me next week for more candid conversations about women's sexual energy. Until then, I remain blissfully yours.